girl, I found the story of Noah's flood to be very confusing. As the most popular story in the Christian Hebrew Bible and in the Jewish Torah, Noah was big in Sunday school. We even had a little plastic ark with little animals that you could like make march into the ark. And they had all the animals, bears and lions and flamingos and dragonflies, everything you can think of from all over the world. And we used those to reenact the story. But what was with all the death and destruction? What about the animals who didn't make it two by two onto the ark? Is that how the dinosaurs died? I was very mixed up. Public school plus Baptist church. What about all the people that drowned? Well, now I understand the story of the flood as a myth. The flood didn't happen. It's a story that people told to better understand the world. It tells us about what people back then believed and about what they thought about the universe. And so I love the story of Noah and the flood, because the point of it isn't plastic dragonflies and lions and tigers and bears and flamingos and who made it onto the boat and who didn't, but that God, even God, can make mistakes and have to start again. Let's review the Hebrew Bible really quickly. 5 minutes or less, great. God creates the world from nothing, from a void. God makes Adam and Eve and a tree of life and a serpent. That was the first bad choice. Adam and Eve get kicked out of Eden. Cain kills his own brother, Abel. Sodom and Gomorrah is destroyed, but not because of gay people, because they were inhospitable to strangers. The Israelites find God and they worship God, but then they see Baal and they worship Baal, and then they come back to God, and then they worship Ashtoreth, and then they come back to God, and then they follow Chemosh, and then they come back to God, and they worship Molech, and they come back to God, and they worship Tammuz, and they come back to God, and then there's incest, and there's warfare, and incredible family violence, and human and animal sacrifice, and finally God says, forget it, I'm done. I'm done. I cannot fix this. I am starting over. And the slate is wiped clean. Literally, water rises and everything washes away. Despite being hurt by Cain killing Abel, despite being disappointed, heartbroken even, by how hard we are on each other, and with all this warfare, God decides to recreate the world. Why? Why not wipe the slate clean, end life on our little blue planet, and be done with it? Well, turns out that God has beginner's mind. Have you ever heard of beginner's mind? Is this a phrase anybody's heard in yoga class or anything? Okay. Beginner's mind is like a full exhale and a fresh inhale. God says, I can't fix these people. This creation of mine is a lemon. I'm going to start again. And I like this story because even though I don't think it happened, God, who is a deity that millions of people across the world pray to on a daily basis, God gets to make a mistake and start over. The mind of a beginner has no preconceptions. Shunryu Suzuki is a Zen master who says the following: in the mind of a beginner, there are many possibilities. In the mind of an expert, there are few. The expert has narrowed their possibilities. Their preconceived notions are taking up all the space they need for new learning. A beginner's mind is full of potential. An expert's is closed. Let's consider Noah and the flood. If God thought, well, this world is a mess, but I can't start again, what will people say? What will the other deities say? It's so embarrassing. And I'll never get those clouds just right again. They took forever. And photosynthesis, don't get me started on how long photosynthesis took. God could be bogged down by preconceived notions about creating the universe. God could remember how much work the whole thing took and just say, I'm not doing it again. But instead, God creates the world with a beginner's mind, not afraid to start over, not preoccupied with self-judgment or with fear. The classic Zen story goes as follows. A hopeful seeker knocks on the door of a Zen master's house.
The Zen master opens it, and the seeker says, "I want to understand Zen. Everything I've learned about Buddhism has been confusing, and my mind is a mess. I don't know my eightfold path from my four noble truths. Can you help me?" The Zen master gestures for him to sit down and brings over two cups and a teapot. He silently pours tea into the first cup. The cup fills, but the Zen master keeps pouring. The cup overflows. The tea races across the saucer into the edge of the table, and it drips onto the floor. The seeker wonders, is this guy crazy? He reaches out his hand, and he gently pushes the teapot back into its upright position. The Zen master smiles and says, "You get it! You must empty your mind of preconceived notions, of stereotypes, of fears, of prejudices. I will give you Zen teachings, but unless your cup is empty, there won't be any space for you to hold on to them. Pour out your ideas about Buddhism, and I will freshen your cup with new knowledge." Our Buddhist student is so mixed up by ideas of what he should know, what he thinks he knows but isn't sure about, that his cup is already full. If there's no room, then where does Zen go? Until he empties his cup, he can't explore. So what happens if you empty out most of your cup, but you keep a few, a little bit in the bottom, a little tea in the bottom? Well, yesterday's lemon tea is going to make today's milky tea curdle. Your experience of something new is going to be tainted by assumptions, fears, leftover anger, disappointment. Unless you rinse that cup clean, empty of every trace, and then you can start again. This month, our theme is discernment, a seldom used word meaning how we decide what we decide. How do we make choices? If you're offered a new job, but you like your old job, how do you decide which to do? If you're in a relationship that was once nothing but golden promise and sunsets and walks on the beach and sweet kissing, and now it's sour arguments, do you stay? How do you decide? Today, I want us to consider having a beginner's mind when faced with a choice. What would it be like to be open and eager when you're discerning? To my mind, the biggest risk of not having a beginner's mind is the "I'm not good at that" mentality. The "I'm not good at that" mentality means once you have tried something and not done well at it, whether it's math or Sudoku or knitting or brain surgery or caregiving, whatever it is, being married, being a writer, once you do it and you're bad at it, you think, well, that's it. I'm not going to do that again. I'm clearly not good at that. It's off the list. I'm never doing it again. Everybody okay? Okay. Okay. My friend Pete teaches at the Berklee School of Music, which is an extremely hard to get into conservatory music program in Boston. And it specializes in jazz. He knows a lot of great musicians, Grammy Award winners, people who are called on to sing at the White House, lots of famous people. So after I learned to play a few folk songs on the guitar, I thought I was really hot stuff. And I said to him, you know, musician to musician, don't you think rock music is kind of boring? Like, all the songs are the same three or four chords. Why don't they branch out a little? What is this four-chord nonsense? Now, Pete is a fascinating guy. He is a much more spiritual person than I am. Pete has the word awe tattooed on his forearm so that he'll never forget how incredible life is, how amazing it is that the sun rises and sets and birds sing and people take care of each other. He wants to remember that he should be appropriately impressed by every moment. So Pete says, no. I love that so many different songs can be built on three chords. Peter, Paul, and Mary, Lenny Kravitz, Meatloaf, the Meat Puppets, all really different sounding music, all coming from the same chords, piled in a different order. U2, New Direction, Katy Perry, Neil Young, and Neil Diamond, all the same three chords. Wildly different sounds. These songs make us feel happy and sad and engaged and energized and despondent and peaceful. three chords, all the same chords. It's amazing. So Pete has it, beginner's mind, the freshness that comes from putting preconceptions on the shelf long enough to listen to a piece of music with an open and eager mind. Yes, he can play all the guitar chords, he can do fancy things with capos, but he still appreciates a three-chord structure that goes into most rock music. He puts his knowledge of music on the shelf when he listens to the radio so he can listen to it with a fresh beginner's mind. Now, this isn't to say that knowledge is bad. Knowledge is never the enemy. Pete doesn't need to forget all his training, just be able to hold it aside so new tea can fill his cup. Likewise, beginner's mind does not apply to safety situations. If you're crossing the street, of course, I want you to remember that those big metal things called cars can hit you. Please do not have beginner's mind when crossing the street. Don't forget that. If a person has been abusive to you, is cruel or mean, you don't need to approach them with a beginner's mind. Just stay away. Plenty of hard-earned wisdom needs to be remembered. Our congregation is growing in a lovely way. It's filling with these fascinating new people who enrich our church family. People who are kind and funny and smart, and they're enhancing our time together. But as we grow, we change. The feeling of the congregation changes. Alice Mann is a church growth specialist, and she famously says that change is inevitable, misery is optional. To keep the misery to a minimum, let's talk about church size for just a second. So our church family is on the cusp between two sizes, pastoral size and program size. These are both good sizes. One isn't better than the other. Pastoral-sized churches have 150 members or less and are minister-centered, meaning most of the worship services are minister-led, most of the programming during the week is at least coordinated by the minister. All members know the minister, and the minister knows all the members of the church and their kids and, you know, what's going on with them. Members at least all recognize each other for the most part, and it's obvious when someone is visiting or somebody is new. The congregation's board manages all the day-to-day business of the church and makes all the big decisions. Program-sized churches, this is the bigger size, have 150 or more members, and we are at 161 right now. Program-sized churches have lots of leaders and are not minister-centered. There's this huge diversity of leadership with different people being in charge of different things. But the minister isn't able to know everyone and isn't the hub for all the church activities. That's a big stressor for a lot of people, even a lot of ministers. Also, members don't all know each other and might not recognize who is a member and who is visiting and who is new. That's also hard. It's nice to know people and it's really nice to feel known. The board takes on greater managerial leadership, and they empower committees to make more decisions on their own. The business of the church becomes more and more the board's responsibility. Our board is really good at this, so I'm not worried at all about that portion of it. The minister focuses on worship and on empowering new leaders. This is the hardest size transition a church can make, from pastoral to program. That's because of our feelings about what church is challenged. Is this congregation itself if we don't all know each other? How do we hold on to everything that's good about our identity while accepting all the new good things that new members bring? What makes Shoreline UU Church Shoreline UU Church in the face of all this change? What identity remains? So this brings up an obvious question. Why do it? Why lose our warm familiarity with each other? Why should I, as your minister, shift my role so dramatically? Well, for me, it's because I believe in Unitarian Universalism. I'm an evangelical UU, which means I think our community, our city, our whole world is better when more people get to experience the all-encompassing, life-giving, love-sharing power of this faith. And I believe this, and I believe in this congregation. Jay and I drove here from Boston. We moved here from Boston because what our congregation does, what this congregation has done for 47 years, is really powerful, and we couldn't wait to be a part of it. Shoreline UU does love really well. We do inclusion really well. We incorporate new folks into our structure, and not only that, but into our family lives and our friend lives and our, you know, our hopes for the future. We care for each other really well. We do the arts really well. Our music is soul-touching. Our theater group engages us in deep questions and makes us laugh. I believe with every fiber of my being that this is an incredibly gifted congregation. And so I'm willing to change my role, even though it's kind of uncomfortable and hard, to let more people in so they can experience that too. What do you think? What do you think about letting more people in to experience Unitarian Universalism and all the cool stuff that we do here? You just give me like a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Okay, all right, good, good. Getting some responses, good, good. Can we grow and still love each other as well as we do now? I really believe we can, but it's not going to be easy all the time, and there will be bumps in the road. Beginner's mind is rising in importance as we expand our church family. There may be times ahead that feel uncomfortable, that challenge what we think it means to do church together. Hold on, because transitions bring bumps, but they don't have to bring misery. Stick with us, and we will figure it out. Keep communicating with me and the board. We want to hear from you about what you think about changes that are going on. In January, we're going to begin after-church conversations about what the Joys and Sorrows ritual means to us and what we think it could look like or how we want to keep it into the future. I jumped the gun announcing in the soundings this month that we would try a new way of doing Joys and Sorrows. I was thinking pastoral size, which means ministered-centered worship, and program-sized congregations, more collaboration happens, and that's a good thing, so I'm sorry about jumping the gun. So after the church service in January, date to be announced, the worship committee and I will have small group conversations here to talk to people about joys and sorrows and learn how we can continue being a church family as we grow. Beginner's mind will help with the pains of transition so we can get through this and see all the beauty a new congregation can hold. Let's keep our minds open and fresh. We do church here really well. Let's keep it that way.